Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. I'm Charlie Carter, and I'm here with Tim Little and Andy Stearns. Let's jump into the conversation.
Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, summer episode number 11. Gentlemen, I have a question for you.
Okay.
How do you do?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well for being August, being that classes are about to start and the summer's careening to an end, and I'm not ready.
Yeah.
How about you, Charlie?
I'm also not ready. I only have one syllabus to update, and it's not ready.
I saw a reel on Instagram, and it said there are five types of teachers in August, and it was like the new teachers, and the guys just... The video clip is a guy saying, help me, help me, help me. And then there was one, it was like for like, you know, K-12 or whatever. So someone wanted to decorate the room, but man, they need one of us like sweating because all of our stuff is coming due and it's been the summer and you know.
What are we all teaching this fall?
It's a good question. Yeah, Let's talk about it.
I'm teaching two sections of Introduction to Bible Study where we talk about Inductive Bible Study Methods, and then Hermeneutics. And then I'm teaching Western Civ 1, which takes you from the dawn of recorded history up to sometime in the Middle Ages. We never really make it as far because we talk a lot about other stuff. And then what else am I teaching? Oh, Greek 1, duh. And then this year I'm teaching Genesis for the first time. And that is Dr. Cole shifted. He got Romans when Mr. Lounsbro became a pastor. And so he needed to offload Genesis, so I took it, but I have not taught it before. And so I've got my course, I got the like lecture outline started, and I've got some assignments prepared, but it'll be one of those where I'm staying a week ahead of the students, you know.
Hebrew grammar. If you want to learn Hebrew, you can sign up.
Milchama.
Milchama. Fight the fight. Hebrew exegesis 1. We're going to translate through Jonah and Ruth and some other sections, talk about narrative and creating sermons from narratival texts. Old Testament seminar module at the end of September. So always a good time. I really enjoy my Old Testament seminar classes. It deals with Old Testament issues and then theological research, equipping students to have a positive seminary experience by giving them the tools they need to do well, to succeed. So that's it. What about you?
I'm teaching one class, Discipleship of Youth.
Excellent.
Where I think it's the best class that I have. All they do is disciple a youth.
That's what I was going to ask, if this is that one where you have the students actually meet with someone. I think that's so good to put it into practice.
I did just get a free book for one class. Aramaic. I'll be teaching Aramaic in the spring. So if you're a Hebrew student and you want to learn Aramaic and translate the Aramaic portions of Daniel, sign up in the spring.
And if you would like to disciple youth, you can take that class and teach them Aramaic.
That's it. Perfect. Aramaic and discipleship of youth.
So
you're horrendous.
I am contracted to build discipleship of youth for an online class.
Oh, nice.
So I mean, that's a tough one though. Because how you do that.
Yeah. It's like hands-on.
Yeah. I mean, it's coaching. Like you're walking them through what they're doing. So it's hard to do that in an online format. But you could take discipleship of youth in the future online maybe. So.
Well, student or listeners, I just want to say we have been very thanked and blessed. We've been very thankful and blessed by how many 5-star reviews we've received. We were trying to get to 200 by our 200th, and we didn't quite make it, but we're still very thankful for our faithful listeners. But still, we are trying to get over 200. That helps us with the metric and the algorithm that the podcast world uses. And so if you haven't done that yet and you like what we have, please write a review. We would appreciate that. We want to shout out our sponsors, our normies, Brickhouse Coffee Company, Porchlight Coffee House, and Blue Cow, the friendliest herd around, as we often like to say here. So do we have any miscellaneous? I think that was our miscellaneous, right, guys? Just talking about our classes. So let's see here. We should do that thing we always do.
we have some business to tend to.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books. Charlie, why don't you start us off? What do you got for us? Is this the summer of random?
No.
Left field?
Not yet.
Partial field? Okay.
Maybe the next episode we'll get into the randos.
That's okay. That's okay.
So this episode, I'm going to talk about a book that I read for a class. I took a class with friend of the podcast, Dean Taylor, Dr. Dean Taylor, who also has a book that's getting published soon. Tim, you want to say something about that?
It should be for sale at this time. So if it's not, I don't know exactly when this episode drops, but yes, the book is like out, so you can pick it up. Pathway to Pastoral Ministry, First Steps for Young Men. If there's somebody in your church that's interested in the pastorate, this would be a great book. It's not that difficult of a read.
Yeah, and I think Dr. Taylor's a great guy to learn pastoral ministry from. And the class I was in was Shepherding, is the name of the class. And so it's an analysis or a contemplation of the role of the pastor as a shepherd. So thinking of that pastoral farmer tending his sheep idea. And we read a lot about that. We discussed it in class, and I thought it was really helpful to me. And I'm not a pastor, but understanding that demeanor, I think it's helpful for all of the mentoring and discipling we do. I think it's helpful in the classroom. I think it's helpful in the church with my friends. And one of the books that we read was, let me get over there, it's The Minister as Shepherd, so right on theme, by Charles Jefferson. And again, he just kind of walks through the idea of the pastor being a shepherd, and he takes that idea contextually from the Bible and pulls applications from it. And the second chapter, he talks about the shepherd's work. That's what I'm going to focus on here. And I'm going to read a little section. He says, "What is pastoral work? A common answer is that it is presiding at marriages and also at funerals. It's baptizing babies and saying a kind word to strangers." Which, pause for a moment.
Whoa.
Charles Jefferson's clearly not a Baptist.
And babies can't breathe underwater.
Yeah, they can't. It's
don't do that.
You're so horrendous.
Why would you baptize a baby?
If you want to like sprinkle them, you could do that, but that's not bad. Okay,
let's keep going.
Sprinkles are okay on ice cream. And not on donuts.
Not on donuts?
Not on babies.
Not on donuts? You're not. Sorry, this is getting off track.
Yeah,
we got to talk about that, though. You're not a sprinkles on donut guy?
I'm not a sprinkles on donut guy.
Let's move on.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Charlie. Go ahead.
Anyway, so I'm going to continue the quote. We had to make a note about the baptizing of babies. So he says, is that what pastoral work is? He's asking. Is it just these things? It is comforting the sick and helping the poor. He who does these things faithfully is a good pastor. Such is the popular conception. But if this is the bulk of pastoral work, how meager it is and how easily it might all be done by laymen. If to these six universally recognized pastoral functions there be added the task of systematic pastoral visitation, such as is expected in many Protestant parishes, the rounded whole of a pastor's work is supposed to be set forth. So you just do the normal services, you visit the people, that's what it is. And he's going to, you can hear kind of the tone I read that with, he's going to say, no, shepherding people is a lot more than just being at the services, kind of running the show and visiting their house every now and then. And he breaks down the job into a bunch of other descriptions, and he pulls these from the New Testament. So for example, number one, the Middle Eastern shepherd was a watchman. He had a watchtower where he's watching over his sheep. Number two, a shepherd in the East was also a guard. He's overseeing and protecting them, protecting his sheep. I really liked number three. And this is where I'm going to kind of camp for just a minute or two. So the shepherd is a guide. And I really like his description. Sheep are not independent travelers. They must have a human conductor. They cannot go to predetermined places by themselves. They cannot start out in the morning in search of pasture and then come home at evening time. Apparently, they have no sense of direction. The greenest pasture may be only a few miles away, but the sheep, left to themselves, cannot find it. What animal is more incapable than a sheep? And
wow.
Now
that's humbling.
Yeah. So you could read that from the pastor's position and be like, wow, he really has a low view of people. Actually, he's right. We should have a pretty low view of ourselves. And we need spiritual help. And that's why God gifts someone to the church to lead them. I thought what was interesting is how he expressed this leadership. And he says this a few pages later. It is commonly known that a minister is a leader, and yet not every minister knows how to lead. In other words, he's not a good pastor. So you could be, in the world's eyes, a really good leader.
Yep.
But worldly leadership and pastoral leadership are not equal.
Amen.
So, in other words, he's not a good pastor. Some ministers try to drive. Their fatal weakness is an inability to see that shepherds cannot drive. You can't drive the sheep. You can't force them to go places. Such men are always cutting, lashing, forcing, and therefore always getting into trouble. They are continually quarreling with their people, and for no other reason than that they do not know how to lead. They push and do not draw. They shove and do not woo. And I love the word woo. That's a fun one. They believe in propulsion and not in attraction. Mm. So I think that's a fun sentence too.
Wow.
Propolding sheep, shooting sheep, rocketing sheep.
Out of a cannon.
Like, wow. They're like, you need to go over there. And they're like, chuck the sheep that way. Clearly that's not going to work.
It's like a law driven as opposed to like a grace driven.
Yeah, I think you could draw a similarity there. And so I think that whether you're a pastor or not, I think that is just a wisdom principle. That if you just tell people what to do, they probably won't just do it. You know, there's very few people that are just going to tacitly endorse and do everything you ask them to do. And where I thought that got really interesting was then his next paragraph. So I'm going to keep reading. So they believe in propulsion and not in attraction. They lack the magic of the shepherd touch. They do not know human nature. They do not realize that men, like sheep, must be led. A minister, here's the next paragraph. A minister must always go in advance of his people. He must lead them in thought. It is tragic when a minister is not the intellectual leader of his people. If his conceptions are the conceptions of the average man, if his ideas are the safe and commonplace ideas of the general community, if in his attitude to great reforms he is not in advance of the crowd, if in pulling down the strongholds of evil, many are more aggressive than he's not a shepherd. And so he paints this shepherd as the mental, intellectual, mind leader of the people around.
It's amazing.
Him. And you can see, Andy, that got a different colored highlight. So
that's a really good quote. I like that.
Yeah. And so he continues. There's a handful of other descriptors here. So the shepherd is a savior. So, you know, don't run away with that, but you know, you protect, you save, you deliver the sheep. So obviously you could crystallize that, and then there's on a human level where we protect and we keep people from things. Let's see. I think he's got a couple more here. I'm just trying to click through. There must have been a really big section there. So maybe that was the last. Yeah, and then he talks about the love of the sheep here. So he's just describing that biblical character when they talk about shepherds, and he's saying, hey, pastors, this is where you get the name pastor from. Like, you're meant to be this type of person, a guard, a protector, a leader. And it was a good book. I actually thought it was very encouraging. If you are in ministry or you're around ministry, I would say this would be a very helpful book for you. And it's not necessarily groundbreaking, any brand new ideas. It's a very simple approach, but lays out, like, oh, these are the tasks, the demeanor of a shepherd. And so I was talking with one of my pastors at church, and I was like, hey, you would enjoy this. And he did get it and read it and loved it too. And I think he read it.
Well, can you remind us of the name again? Say the name one more time.
Yeah, it's The Minister as Shepherd by Charles Jefferson. And yeah, it's
that's really good
for someone in ministry. I think it's really worth the time. I'm going to give it, I had a number in my mind. I wanted to rank it. And my initial gut reaction was that's too high. I'm going to go with 4. I'm going to give it a 4, which is still a good score. Mm-hmm. But I would say if you are a pastor, it's probably like a 6 or a 7. If you're just a layman, you enjoy reading about the church and thinking through these things, it's probably like a 4.
And actually, as a layman, if your church has ever gone through needing a pastor, that there is a lot of headhunting and corporate thought in how you select a pastor. I've been at churches where they hire an outside firm to headhunt a guy, and they ask the church, like, what are you looking for? What age? How many kids? What kind of focus? And that book sounds like the antidote to that kind of nonsense. So that sounds really interesting.
Yeah. So one more time, The Minister is Shepherd by Charles Jefferson. I think it's in the bookstore. I don't know. I bought it on Kindle. So sorry, Tim, but, yeah, there's my book.
All right. So what does the Shack Stack, a children's book, and Beyonce have in common?
A lot.
They're all my next books in business, folks. That's right. This is how Rand we're getting.
I just heard Beyonce
so
and Shack Stack.
I went to the public library.
Oh, wow.
And we were in the kids section. And I thought, I saw these kids books.
That is so bad.
Isn't that bad? Listener, you could look the cover of this book up that I'm about to tell you about, and you would immediately be like, that's horrible.
Now, I feel like I have to make public comment here.
Yes.
I believe on this podcast, I have said that I prefer my coffee Beyonce colored. So, like, with a little cream in it, you know, that's the color. I'm pretty sure I've said that before. I retract my statement with this book. I don't want anything of this ilk.
That was like a stick in the spoke of my bicycle in my mind. I don't even know where that came from. But here's what I would say. You can't even look. I held this up to, he had to look away. Now, listener, here's why Beyonce is a terrible person to put in front of anyone's eyes. And she's not a good person. She's been in the news for the last 15 years as a very immoral woman, female performer in various bands. And so what drew me to this was the fact that this is a kid's book and it's called Beyonce, Shine Your Light. And I thought, I'm checking this thing out. So I just want to read the dedication on the inside cover. This book is dedicated to, all caps with an exclamation point, you. You are special and spectacular. Show us what you've got. Your voice might feel as green and as slight as the curled up sprout. Play, explore, argue, laugh, listen. It's growing. Can you hear it? Speak up. And it just goes on to this like super pep talk. It's like what Carl Truman talked about in The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, but for a kid. So here's the thing. When I go through this book, I'm just going to show you guys some of the pictures. Okay. It's just this little girl. Okay. And she's playing with a swing, and then she does like a talent contest and she has a good voice, and then she does more. And then now notice how she's dressed in all of these so far. Normal clothing. Okay. Little narc cartoon, normal clothing.
Yep. Good. Yep.
And then it's like her developing through ballet and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Still fairly normal. There's the ballet.
Is this Beyonce's story?
This is Beyonce's story.
Oh.
And the point is that you, your daughter, you little girl should be like Beyonce. You uh-huh. should ignore everyone. Like, dance to your own tune and shine your light, not what anyone else tells you.
Gotcha.
Now, there's a couple of thoughts. Number one, there's her in her, I think it's Destiny's Child is the band that she got popular in. There's her again. Still, you know, clothing is like...
not too bad.
Not terrible. I mean, she's in like a dancing thing there, but it's a cartoon. Normal. Okay, so I'm just saying, like, I'm going through this and the ideas that are being spread in this book are terrible. Okay.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Okay. But I just want you to know, like, aside from that kind of raunchy, like pose, mm-hmm. everything in here, you would get this impression that she's just some performer who does some stuff. Now I went to her wiki page. I'm like, I'm going to study her a little bit before I talk about this book. Now I want you guys to see what I did. You guys look up at the screen. That's the wiki page.
Uh-huh.
And so I went by and I had to literally put clothes on every picture of her. Now, do you see that? I had to draw a dress on her there, and I had to...
Well, you just did what they did in the book. They did the same thing.
Yep, there's a dress. See, she wasn't wearing enough clothing on that picture. There's probably 20 pictures in here, and I had to go through. And I'm like, I'm not going to stare at this. And if anyone found this, I'm like, I don't want to look at that. I had to put clothes on her. And as you go through, there's all kinds of really interesting stuff. So her religion, she was raised Methodist. Her mom's family was Catholic. And then she ends up going to a United Methodist Church. Hint, hint, we're going to be talking about them in the future episodes this fall. So I just want to point out that I would never recommend this book. And the story was all like me-centered. But, and it's not surprising that you'd find this in a public library. But my point, I think the thing is if some parent's kid wanted to read this and you got this, you would get one understanding of what she's like. That's not what you get when you read her stuff or watch her videos or listen to her music, which I don't do any of that stuff. So this goes on the Shack Stack.
Are you going to return that to the library?
I am.
Of course,
sadly. That's probably wise.
But I will tell a story about the Ankeny Library. One time I was going through the kids' biographies because Evan and Abby, I was there and they wanted to read some biographies or whatever. I was looking through the kids' books. And I found one on Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it may have dropped on the floor and been accidentally bumped under the display panel. I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't remember if that was, I don't know. I can't remember.
You're so horrendous.
All that to say, listener, I know no one's going to read this book. But that's like what's out there, and it's probably worth you knowing. So that's all. For the Shack Stack, a kid's book about Beyonce.
So on that note, the book I have...
How do you transition?
...is Redeeming Sex and Marriage by Scott Mell.
Is this random, Tim?
This is mini book.
That was random, Andy.
Oh, random, Tim. Okay, I got
good.
Mixed up.
That's pretty good.
That's a good random.
I know, that's pretty random, isn't it?
Okay.
So this was recently published by PNR, Presbyterian Reform Publishing. This is one of the presses that I trust a fair amount more. Tim Challies recommended this book on his blog. I wanted to get a little bit familiar with it. I'm writing an article on de-Christologizing the Song of Songs. Yes, Carter.
Who recommended that?
Tim Challies.
Tim Challies?
Friend of the podcast.
Thank you.
So Tim is a more reformed than we are, so that he would see this book so affirmingly doesn't really surprise me. But the subtitle is How the Gospel Rescues Sex, Transforms Marriage, and Reveals the Glory of God. The relationship between sex and God, he has a whole section on it, I believe is significantly overstated, and I disagree with him on this point. So overall, I think the book is actually a decent book. I haven't read it all. I read basically the first section because that's the part that interested me, where he develops the theology of sex. It draws too tight of a correspondence between God and the sexual relationship between a husband and a wife. I don't think that can be supported biblically, and I'm writing an article on it. So my mini book is Redeeming Sex and Marriage. I'm going to give it a 2 on the Thinkling's goodness scale. I think it's still profitable, but I think he's off on a couple of points. I'm done.
All right, let's have a final meditation in God's word. Today, I want to go to Psalm 14:1. A couple weeks back, the three of us were at an event speaking, and I don't know if we've talked about that yet. Maybe we will in a future episode. But I was talking about atheism, and we've talked about this back in episode 35 of this podcast, a book called The Making of an Atheist. But in that book, the author makes the helpful case that atheism is not an intellectual problem, it's an immorality problem. And that primarily when you're walking away from God, it's because you have sin in your life. And so I'm going to read Psalm 14:1 and make a comment. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. And then the second half of the line says this, they are corrupt, they do abominable deeds, there is none who do good. Now today, if I were to say that no atheist does good things, that would be to court controversy and probably get canceled. And I would say that there are people who do some good things at like a world level. They help other people, they're kind, that sort of thing. But from an atheist perspective, none of that can be motivated by the fear of the Lord, and that would make it sin. None of it can be motivated by faith. But I think the thing to note here is that this goes along with Romans chapter 1, with the great decline of people knowing there's a God and rejecting that and suppressing it. And how do they reject and suppress it? They do that in sin. Sometimes I don't think this is on purpose, but I would say that this psalm says that the person who says there's no God is living a corrupt life filled with abominable deeds and not actual true good things. As I look back in my own life, there were times where I had doubts about Christianity. And I remember thinking, how do I know if this is true? How do I know if God exists? I've never heard his voice. I've never seen him. Those sorts of things. And so sometimes you can read books and those will help. But it's interesting, looking back in my own experience, at those times in my life, I was walking in sin. I wasn't repenting of it. I wasn't being discipled through it. I wasn't dealing with it. And so I would simply say today that if you're a believer and find yourself in a church and you're not walking in a discipleship relationship with either your pastor or an older godly Christian who's helping you grow, and you find yourself doubting, ask this question: is there sin in your life that you're not dealing with? And don't just think about the big nasty sins like homosexuality or sex before or outside of marriage or anything like that. I mean, think of those things, but also think about indwelling pride, like the very fact that you're arrogant and you're not dealing with it ever. That could be a source of doubt. We even saw that in Rosaria Butterfield's book, The Secret Thoughts of an Unlikely Convert. She was a lesbian, and the thing that led her out of that after she got saved was the fact that she was prideful and she thought she would deal with her pride. So, believer, just a quick thought for you today. Do you struggle with doubts? Do you ever have doubts that nag you? You should get answers. We're in an apologetics renaissance. There are more answers to your doubts than have ever existed in Christianity's 2,000-year history. But it's very possible that there's undealt with sin in your life. And you can get all the answers in the world, but if you don't deal with that sin, you're probably going to continue straying further and further. Friend, I love you. And so take this as a loving warning and encouragement to reach out and be discipled. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.